Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Remember a few weeks ago when we had this guy who's some sort of columnist for the Marxist Chicago Reader on, and he was just he thought his gotcha moment was going to be asking me where I vote and
where you live,
where I have residency, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I remember that.
He was surprised. I think he was surprised to find out that. Sort of open and notorious, sort of public, I tend to hide out in the open that I established residency in Florida and had a place in Naples. So
we know that.
Wasn't much of a gotcha moment. And so fast forward to yesterday, and I start getting these texts and calls from your dutiful members of the Chicago Democrat Socialist Comm Shop, who portray themselves as journalists. I'm talking about the Greg Hineses and the Marianne Ahearns and others of the world. The Chicago Press Corps, the Comm Shop for the established power structure in Chicago and Illinois. I get these calls about newspapers that you've heard us talk about on this show literally for years.
Eight years? How many years? I've known about that. I've been reading City Wire.
Chicago City Wire. I've been reading Cook News, that. West Cook News, so on and so forth.
Yeah, and they do a lot of good work.
Literally have been talking. We did a whole property tax series of property tax stories that we spent months on end poring over on this show that were all produced by papers to which I'm affiliated, which is disclosed, has been disclosed innumerable times. Almost every time we mention this story comes from South Cook News. It's a paper to which I'm affiliated, so on and so forth.
I mean,
it's been like that since the beginning of the papers, when we first started publishing these papers.
How many years ago was it?
I don't know, a decade? It was the fake news, don't pay attention to misinformation, blah, blah, blah. This is the early days where anyone on the left... all anyone on the left could utter was misinformation, fake news, lies, racism, phobia, this, ism, that, blah, blah, blah. This has been covered by the same people who covered it yesterday any number of times throughout any number of election cycles.
Yeah, and Chicago City Wire, they broke the story about when the CTU came forward and said a teacher died or a mom died because her daughter brought COVID home to her. And they realized, no. And they waited, and they're the only station that did the story, and then everybody else picked up on it that the mom drank herself to death and did not die from COVID. And there's story after story that they've done that has been
so you'll respected. Imagine my surprise when I get an email from Marianne Ahearn saying, Governor Jelly Belly, although I don't think she used the phrase Jelly Belly,
no.
he says your papers are misinformation, and they only present one point of view. And my response was, oh, you mean like the AFL-CIO Times and the Chicago Tribune? We have a newspaper that's owned by a labor union and now a government-funded media outlet that is allied with the labor union. And you want to talk to me about presenting one point of view? The difference, as I've said, from the beginning of the papers that I was a part of starting, the difference is I am open and notorious. I have a point of view. It informs the story, and so do the people associated with these papers. It informs the stories we choose and how we choose to cover them, which is what I've always said about the Chicago Press Corps and the D.C. Press Corps, except they lie about it and they pretend they come to the table as blank slates. They have no point of view. There's no editorial discretion or worldview, political perspective that informs the stories they select. And that is a lie. The difference between me and them is I'm honest about my approach and intentions, and they are not.
Well, she declared, Marian Ahern said that you're not a real newspaper yesterday.
The papers, they've been delivered under different names. This one, the Chicago City Wire. They all claim to have real data and real news, but it's also a campaign message, not a real newspaper.
Right. Again, unlike the AFL-CIO, NPR Times, unlike the Chicago Tribune, these different editions that Marianne is pretending are news to her, they're online. They've been online for a decade, and intermittently they've been mailed out. They have different stories or different regionally appropriate content to a particular story.
Like the Daily Herald does the same thing.
So here's my challenge to Marianne and Greg Hines and Jelly Belly and everybody else, all the other trolls on the left on social media, you know, swishing over each other like Asian carp with their mouths agape to gobble up whatever is said by the Chicago Press Corps so they can regurgitate it. I'm reading South Cook News. Got South Cook News right here. You go through these stories and the information, and you tell me what is a lie. Tell me what is inaccurate. Tell me what is misinformation.
Well,
if you want to tell me it has a point of view, yeah, it has a point of view. Right, I'm honest and direct about that. Tell me what is inaccurate, what is misinformation. They get away with, because it's the comm shop for Pritzker and Lightfoot, they get away with saying it's lies, it's misinformation, it's racism, all the things that they say all the time about everything that is not their content or that doesn't agree with their position. Go through at like the cover story. It's literally going to be the end of days, which is a James Glasgow quote from a speech he gave over the summer in Naperville. Then Glasgow and Berlin, who are featured in the cover story, it's essentially a summary of the things they said on this program about the Safety Act. See, they don't want to talk about the substance of the Safety Act.
No.
This insert on the front page of the South Cook News and other editions, non-detainable offenses under the Safety Act, and it's listed.
Right, but their point of contention.
Let me finish. And it's listed. And the source on that is Bob Berlin's office, the DuPage County State's Attorney's Office. He did a PowerPoint on the Safety Act. So tell me what is inaccurate about the content, the failure, and why they can pantomime it all they want, and you can be friends with whoever you want. But if you let anyone get away with accusations of misinformation and lying and racism, be specific. What is inaccurate? What is a lie? What is racist? Oh, because we have mugshots of all the people by region, not all the people, a smattering of the people to give you a sense of it, to make it concrete, of the kind of people who will be no cash bailed out. They'll get a walk under the Safety Act to make it real, so it's not just an abstraction. It's not just a slide from a PowerPoint. I'm sorry that we have Julio Moreno profiled, who's being currently held in Cook County Jail on $400,000 bond for aggravated criminal sexual abuse. Under the Safety Act, he walks.
There are two pages of photos of men, mostly black and Latino, who, according to the paper, will be released on bond in DuPage County.
And then Pritzker picked up on racist.
Stop. It's not according to the paper. It's according to Cook County. It's according to DuPage County. It's according to Will County. I'm sorry, the alleged criminal perpetrators these alleged violent criminals, I'm sorry they don't meet with the perfect racial representation of Chicagoland or America or whatever Marianne Ahern wants it to represent. I'm sorry crime victims are not proportionally representative by race either. They're obsessed with race, not me. I'm obsessed with public safety. And I'm sorry if, you know, Lester Pierce is a black dude who's who's being held on a $180,000 bond in Cook County Jail for felony possession of a weapon, and he would get a walk. I'm sorry if Paul Pena is a, I don't know, maybe he's a Latino dude, I don't even know. Felony possession, use of a firearm while on parole, $250,000 bond in Cook County Jail. He'd take a walk under the Safety Act. I'm sorry if Roque Cantera, who's being held at Cook County Jail on $200,000 bond for child porn, is he Latino? I don't know. Michael Hawkins is a honky. I'm sorry, he's included at $500,000 Cook County Jail on bond in Cook County Jail for child porn and so on and so forth. Keith Kegel, another honky, domestic battery, bodily harm, $500,000, Cook County Jail. He'd take a walk under the Safe Act. Gosh, I'm sorry I didn't worry about the races of the honkies and the black guys and the Latino guys and the Asian guys, because who cares? It's looking at the non-detainable offenses under the Safety Act, second-degree murder, drug-induced homicide, arson, aggravated battery, kidnapping, burglary, robbery, aggravated fleeing and eluding, drug offenses, and so forth. I'm sorry if we took that list and then applied it to who's actually being held for trial right now in Cook County, in Will County, in DuPage, and everywhere else. Oh, it doesn't meet with, oh, I'm playing racial politics. I've injected race into the race. Are you kidding me? Into the campaign. All these people do is talk about race. That's all they do.
Governor Pritzker responded.
This is Dan Prof from his home in Florida, injecting race into the campaigns for governor here in Illinois.
Yeah, I'm the guy talking about race. I've injected race into politics in Chicago and Illinois. By the way, hey, Jelly
Belly.
You
want to talk about Florida homes? Let's go.
Hey, I'm right here.
You've been You've been here for 5 months.
Meet me over at the Elmhurst Cigar House. I'll teach you to be a man and smoke a cigar. I'm right here.
He's not done with you.
I have a home in Florida. Yeah, you got, you know,
homes
everywhere. What does that even mean? I'm injecting, but that's not even the point, because it's not about me. It's just him boogeyman politics because he doesn't want to address the substance of the Safety Act. No one on the left will talk about the Safety Act other than to say this. It's a lie. What we're saying is a lie. Not me. Who am I? I'm a guy who blathers on the radio. Prosecutors. 100 of 102 county state's attorneys in Illinois opposed to it. Berlin, Glasgow, Republican, Democrat. Jim Rowe, Kankakee, Democrat.
Denton Aud, White County, state's attorney.
There's a very strong chance that they will try to tweak it. The way that it's been drafted, again, is seriously flawed. It will be an absolute disaster.
Yeah, so everybody, every sheriff and every county prosecutor, not named King Fox or Einhot from Lake County, they're all saying the same thing.
Superintendent Brown saying the same thing.
Which is why they won't talk about it.
He wants it changed.
They don't want to talk about it. Jelly Belly and Triple Threat don't want to talk about it. They just want to say, if you make it real for people, you're racist. It's misinformation. They're lying.
No, it's lies.
These are lies, and they're putting them out in various forms.
And the whole, you know, you call me racist all day. I mean, it's been rendered so inert by its overuse and misapplication. I was just thinking about this on the drive-in. I've got about 10,000 hours of radio over the last decade in this market. So go ahead, pour over it. It's amazing how I'm this boogeyman. I'm this racist. I'm injecting race into things. It's amazing I've been able to survive this long.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The governor's race is heating up because, Governor Spaulding is feeling the heat, as well he should be, for the policy choices he made, most notably on taxes. Raise doubling the gas tax, trying to increase your income taxes.
And then
even as he runs around lying with the help of the Chicago and Springfield press corps, talking about tax relief because he temporarily suspended the incremental inflationary increases for your gas tax and so on and so forth. What a joke, talking about misinformation and fake news, which is the topic du jour, because the newspapers to which I'm affiliated that have been circulating, perhaps you've gotten some, are being accused by Jelly Belly and the Chicago Press Corps, his dutiful servants, handmaidens,
and real
of
quick about,
misinformation and quick, lying and racism and so forth.
About the gas, too, and then he's trying to force gas station owners to put up a sticker that says he froze the gas.
He's not trying to force
them. Yeah, he is forcing them.
Yeah, yes.
Ridiculous.
Yes.
But yeah, back to your fake news, because Marian Ahern from NBC5 declared that these aren't real newspapers.
The papers, they've been delivered under different names. This one, the Chicago City Wire. They all claim to have real data and real news, but it's also a campaign message, not a real newspaper.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. What my point of contention is that I know these reporters from Channel 9, 5, 7. They read your newspapers and get story ideas, and then that helps them, you know, fill these slots that they have to fill in every day. So your newspapers make news. It's just
they don't want cognitive dissonance. They have a stranglehold on. They've had a stranglehold for so long on the political content of news coverage, and they don't like the pushback. They don't like, frankly, being exposed to a wide swath of the electorate in Illinois as having been telling only one side of the story for generations, as at the service of, as I said before, the established power structure in the city and state, as purveyors of the groupthink from which they suffer. So then somebody comes along and does the work they didn't do. And it's not just me, and it's not just our newspaper group. It's other people that have stepped up, legislators, county prosecutors, necessarily. It wouldn't be a story if you had county prosecutors saying, yeah, we think it's fine. That's not what they're saying about the Safety Act. They're saying, end of days. That's what Jim Glasgow said. I don't know how stark it could be, how much more stark it could be. In addition to, and it's not just the no cash bail. There are other things, and we went through it with Berlin from DuPage County and Glasgow from Will County when they were on the show, and we will again and again and again. And by the way, we have Darren Bailey on the program at 7 o'clock and Willie Wilson at 7:30. So we'll see if Willie still will allow me to be a whitey for Willie now that I've been called a racist by Lightfoot and Pritzker. But they just don't want to deal on the merits because they've never had to. And they don't think they have to now. And there's probably a good reason for that, because you get to get away with saying misinformation and lies. And my challenge, to repeat, is simple. Go through the newspapers, and they've been done by topic areas. The first one was COVID and school-related with the kids going back to school. The last edition was the one that really got their attention because it hits them where it hurts, which is on public safety, since that is a fleeting proposition in Chicago and Illinois.
And you show two pages of mugshots of people who will be released when the Safety Act goes into effect in January.
Right. And the headline for the, just so you know, it's like we're not just picking pictures trying to racialize, injecting race into the campaign. Oh, give me a break. The headline for the mugshots is, under the Safety Act, these suspects would be released to Cook County neighborhoods. And the same goes in DuPage and Will and Lake, et cetera, et cetera.
Throughout the whole state. And Governor wanted you to know this, Dan.
This is Dan Proff from his home in Florida, injecting race into the campaigns for governor here in Illinois.
It's just such an amazing statement. Not the part about me, because who cares about me or him? The idea that somebody new is injecting race into the campaign or to Illinois and Chicago politics. That's just a stunningly disingenuous statement, but he gets away with it because where's the follow-up? Where's the follow-up when you make the claim of misinformation or lies? Where's the time where they have to stand and deliver? Never.
They run away. He runs away from the lectern.
He doesn't have to run. And he cannot run. He doesn't have to run because where are they to ask the follow-up? Nowhere.
Well, this is the end of Marianne Ahern's piece because I'm letting her speak for herself.
Should also note, every one of those shown as someone who will be let out with cash bail is gotten rid of. The prosecutor may seek, and also the judge may order, pretrial detention.
Yeah. So, I mean...
That could take 48 hours.
Well, No. The presumption... Berlin and Glasgow explain this. The presumption is release. The idea because, technically, under extraordinary circumstances, which are delineated in the legislation, although it's a bit confusing because it's a terribly written bill, by the way. Has Pritzker read it? Probably not.
No.
Has Marianne Ahern? Definitely not.
Well, no.
Have
one
I? Yes. Has Glasgow? Yes. Has Berlin? Yes. It's not going to happen. They're going to be out. The people profiled here and in the other editions, and you're hearing from county prosecutors. I just can't stress that enough. This is not me versus Pritzker or Bailey versus Pritzker. This is county prosecutors and county sheriffs who know what they're talking about, who understand, and judges, by the way. You know, they confer. They talk to one another. They're telling you what is going to happen. You can just,
Democrats are too. I mean, this is,
you can not believe it. It's fine. Don't believe it.
That's what they're doing. They're burying their head in their sand.
But just let's just be clear about something that is that there is no way you can dispute. Who is telling you what is going to happen? It is not me. It is county prosecutors and sheriffs and judges are loath to speak in public, but if you talk to the county prosecutors and sheriffs, they will tell you they've had these same conversations with the judges. So just understand that when whatever comes to pass, comes to pass.
And here's another, you know, Denton Odd, we played him earlier, White County State's attorney. This is who he says it's going to benefit.
Well, that the proponents claim to be benefiting, claim to be helping the low-level offenders, they're not going to be helped out. They're actually going to be harmed by this. They're actually going to be sitting in jail longer.
Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, Dan, Amy. You know, Marianne Ahern, I just did not get these people doing this. And, you know, you want to sue her if you can, Dan. But
no.
This stuff never ends. One of the other, some guy got shot, right? All you heard on the news, our lefty news, was a guy got shot at a liquor store, I think, at 200 North Pulaski. Well, it turns out when you look at the video of that, the guy who did the shooting got sucker punched standing at the counter first by another guy. Then he's just walking out the door, turned around and got some street justice and punched a hole in him, and now the guy's dead. So he won't be doing that again. In addition to that, you know another lefty that that never gets talked about who claims to be all for the for the people? Ben Jarofsky of The Reader.
Oh, please.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you something. I liked a lot of it, the stuff that he did on TIFFs, but of course nothing got reformed by that. But I mean, and aside from that, the guy is race. It never ends, and the people of Chicago and Cook County and Illinois buy into this crap. Thanks much, guys.
Thanks for the call, Greg. Again, too, the whole, you know, profiling criminals, alleged criminals, people that are being detained on serious charges. And it happens that a majority of them are minority, which also happens to be the fact that a majority of violent crime committed in Chicago and Cook County is committed by minority individuals. It's disproportional. It is not a commentary on black or brown people.
But they turn that into
it. It's just the fact.
Ridiculous.
But you know what they never do? They never do? They never concern themselves with the victims, just generally and specifically when it comes to race. How many times have we said on this show what I am about to repeat? 80% of the homicides and shootings we know from arrest records, black individuals. 80% of the victims, black individuals.
Yeah.
I'm not wishing this to be. We're describing what is and what should be done about it. But they don't want to do anything about it. They want to turn the streets over to predators because, or they're willing, I should say, to turn the street over to predators, a small group of people who represent a preponderance of the violent crime because the race hustle is how they maintain power, they believe. And they may be right because they've gotten away with it so far. And that's the real question. I mean, it's the question that I've been asking in my ads. How much worse does it have to get? What does it take to stuff that race hustle down their throats and throw them out of office? You want to talk about cynical politics? You want to talk about misinformation and lying and, dare I say, racism? It is the race hustler's rap. Triple Threat's a purveyor of it. Spalding is a purveyor of it. The entire Democrat Socialist Party is built around it. Rich in Indian Head Park.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. Dan, there was a newspaper that I received yesterday. It's the West Cook News.
Yeah.
And it had your article in there when you interviewed Berlin and Glasgow,
mm-hmm.
and how they were saying how this safety TAC is going to change everything as far as prosecutions go. But I didn't see anything in there that they had anything to do with any kind of race.
Well, that's
so
because
maybe you can tell me what they're talking
he's just
about.
Saying the facts.
I have no idea.
Thanks for the coverage. Well, they didn't. And Glasgow and Berlin didn't talk about race either. They talked about public safety.
Right.
Yeah.
People can't believe that this is going to happen.
And the story, the other front page story in most of the editions, Jim Murphy resigns from Cook County State's Attorney's Office after 25 years. I mean, that's a story that was covered somewhat by the Chicago Press Corps, but is that misinformation too? And what he had to say about Kim Fox's office? What he had to say about Kim Fox? This is the head of Felony Review. I wish I could stay. I would love to continue to fight for the victims of crime and to continue to stand with each of you, especially in the face of the overwhelming crime that is crippling our communities. However, I can no longer work for this administration. I have zero confidence in their leadership. Is Jim Murphy a racist? Is he peddling misinformation? Cook County, Felony Review. Point person. And a lot of people know in the law enforcement community, know Jim Murphy and have tremendous respect for him from everything I've heard. 25 years.
Love him.
25 years. Is he a misinformationist? Pritzker? Lightfoot? See, they won't go after Jim Murphy because they can't. They can go after you know, me, which is fine. I don't care. I'm just trying to explain to you what they do. This is not woe is me. I could care less. Could not care less. This is to explain they need a boogeyman for you to focus on so you don't focus on what they have done, what is happening, and the proximate cause of what is happening. So focus on MAGA extremists, semi-fascists. Focus on Trump. Focus on me. Focus on, you know, something that Darren Bailey said that was taken, you know, in the worst possible way and so on and so forth. Let's make this about anything and everybody that's not part of our crew and that's not, that doesn't put us in jeopardy of having to account for what we've done. That's the racket. That's what they do. And a lot of times it works. And we're going to find out if it works again this November 8th, aren't we? John in November 8th. John in Naperville. I've got November 8th on the mind.
That's right. Hey, another consequence of the Safety Act nobody's talking about. I had a chance to talk to the defense attorney. The defense attorneys will typically have the defendants sign over their bond to them and guarantee payment for their services. That's gone of January 1st.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
something
right.
else to worry about.
Thanks for the call, John.
And if you're a police officer and somebody makes an accusation against you, you can't get that expunged from your record.
There's also, I mean, there's
the offender, he can get his record, you know, expunged, but not the police officer.
We'll have to get into it too, because there's issues with rules of engagement for police to use their weapons. I mean, it's
a hot mess. It's 800 pages of just
telling you.
I'm poorly not just written, rushed through legislation. It was awful.
Just conveying what people who do this every day prosecute, arrest, prosecute, preside. What people do this every day are trying to tell you. Okay. Ron, Southside.
Hey, good morning, Dan. And Dan, continue to put the facts out there. And Lightfoot, Pritzker, they just lying pieces of crap. I mean it. And we have to get them out of office. But that's all I want to say. Please continue on. The facts will stand. But yeah, just, I mean, man, they're just absolute lying pieces of garbage. They rely on, they're the ones who rely on this racism talk. So just ignore them. And let's get to the polls November 8th, especially get that big fat piece of crap out of office, starting with him. Let's send a message in this state. Have a good day.
Thanks, Ron. I like that. Tony and Downers Grove.
Yeah, well, you know, up is down, down is up. How many times are we seeing this with a social issue, a political issue? A small group gets backed by journalists. If we check the source and the motivation for every article written behind a story, we'd be busy discrediting a lot of people. But here's the real challenge. It's how do you continually confront someone like Pritzker with the facts after they stand up there in a self-righteous, indignant manner and call you a liar? And it could be as simple as, hey, you did not balance the budget. You used federal money to balance the budget, but then you're cut off if you ask an additional question. So the trick, Dan, is how do you get people to continue to ask the follow-up questions in mainstream media so the truth can finally get out there? That's the real issue. We always say it. You always talk about it. Where are the follow-up questions? No, I'm not going to stop asking the question. I'm going to expose you. Until that happens, we're going to continue in the same roller coaster.
All right. Thanks, Tony. Tom, Deer Park.
Yeah, we get the Lake County Gazette. And probably a week ago, my wife said, "Here, you know, this is Dan's paper, right?" I said, "Yeah." And she says, "There's nothing that's not wrong in here." I said, "He publishes it. It's his point of view." And to give you a couple examples, we get a lot of stuff here. Chicago Catholic, that's published by Cardinal Supich, the Archdiocese. It's about Catholics, and it's pretty darn woke since he's had the helm at the Arch.
Oh, yeah.
And the other example I give is yesterday's Cranes, where It was about female attorneys in Chicago and their accomplishments. There wasn't one single male attorney in there, nor a transgender that I know of. So is that a misandrist operation? Maybe you could ask Craig Hines that.
Thanks, Tom. Chuck Delavan.
Hey, I'm sorry. I said Pritzker was up swimming by Lake Geneva, and they tried to shove him back in because he was a beach whale. Last weekend, I was down by Marengo Guns. True story. Route 23 was blocked off. A limousine pulls in a parking lot. There's Pritzker in the back seat. He goes, I got to get down to 290 right now. Do you know a back road to get down? I got to get down to 290. I go, looks to me like you're going to have to lose about 100.5 to get down there.
Hi-oh.
Talk to you later.
Oh, I see what he did there.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I know masks are over for you and so many other COVID mandates and hassles are over, but not for everybody.
They're not over. Yesterday, in New York, Kathy Hochul ended the mask mandate for mass transit.
Wonderful. I'm sure that'll get a lot of people back on the subway there.
Yeah.
Head Start. Head Start preschools and child care centers, so schools where the federal government has direct oversight.
Right.
Because it's federal dollars. Mandatory masking still on the books for teachers and children as young as 2 years old.
Oh, God.
Mark Skousen, our economist friend, writing in the Wall Street Journal. I was looking forward to the American Economic Association's January conference in New Orleans after 2 years of virtual meetings this coming January. Then I got the notice from the American Economic Association. Economists, you know, they're supposed to be good at trade-offs, at least assessing them. All registrants will be required to be vaccinated against COVID-19 and to have received at least one booster. High-quality masks, N95 or better, will be required in all indoor conference spaces. Skousen writes, I can fly to New Orleans, teach college classes, go to restaurants, gyms, and social events without wearing a mask or showing proof of vaccination. Even Broadway theaters have dropped their demand for masks. But by the way, Chicago theaters haven't.
No, they haven't.
There's no mandate being imposed by the hotel, if you're wondering. This is all about the American Economic Association and the left that's in charge of that, so they're virtue signaling. Skousen writes, maybe the American Economic Association should hold its annual meeting in Beijing.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can also reach us on our text line at 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Maybe it's time. You know, we talked about this. Say, you want to wear a mask until rapture, go for it. I don't care. We're not going to behave like the minders, the nagging minders that the COVIDians behaved, you know, how they presented themselves during the pandemic, you know, running around tattling and shaming and so on and so forth. Anybody who didn't have their mask over their nose and mouth and so on and so forth.
Yeah, one guy got chased around the Jewels with a price gun because he wasn't wearing a mask. People got in fist fights.
So we're
people
not
ended, relationships ended.
So we're not going to do that. But maybe we should intervene in this way, like an actual intervention. Intervene with reason and sense. This is the point that Vinay Prasad, Dr. Vinay Prasad, makes over at his Substack, Sensible Med. Vinay Prasad is a oncologist. He's also an associate professor of epidemiology at University of California, San Francisco. So he's not just some dude. He's one of those guys that has credentials that we're supposed to listen to. And we should listen to this guy because he also is reasonable, which is an, you know, a nice addition to the credentials. He writes, it's time for medical professionals to advise young, middle-aged, healthy people to throw away your N95, leave your CO2 monitor at home, and get back to life. The masks, the CO2 monitors, and so forth, not proportionate responses. You are not acting reasonably. Someone needs to tell you. Anyone who plans on being around for the next decade has only two things guaranteed. You will definitely get COVID-19, and you will definitely pay taxes. Over the next few years, COVID-19 will engulf everyone on Earth. Over the next few decades, it will engulf everyone many times over. Given you're eventually going to get COVID, and it's less dangerous than flu, you should take all the same precautions you used to take for flu, but no more. Wash your hands in the winter. You should do that now. At the same time, you don't have to be excessive about it. You can do it like you did before, reasonably. You know what you didn't do. You didn't carry a CO2 monitor and have a heart attack if it goes to 1,800 ppm or whatever the hell scale it uses. In fact, if you even know the scale, you might benefit to talking to someone. Pre-COVID, you didn't wear a 995 mask when you went to the grocery store. Clutching it tight in your, if you've heard someone cough, you don't need to do that now. You didn't stuff a child's face into a counterfeit, untested N95 mask. If you didn't do it then, you shouldn't do it today. You didn't let mid-level school officials make up masking rules, and we should not do that now. You would never shield your face from an infant in daycare for hour after hour, day after day. Doing that now is deranged. You didn't complain that your employer was trying to encourage people to show up to work so they can justify paying them. Don't do that now. Pre-COVID, you were willing to eat food with friends and colleagues inside. You should do that now. For those who disagree with Dr. Prasad, he writes, if you do, articulate the reason. Do you really think you can avoid COVID-19 indefinitely? Are you going to carry a CO2 monitor in 2025? How long will you continue to do this? Do you think it's possible you're acting irrationally? Have you contemplated that? Think it's possible that you're over the top. The response is disproportionate.
Well, they're all in and they're brainwashed now. And there's a lot of people still wearing masks. At CPS, if you had COVID and you're out, you have to wear a mask for 10 days. And anybody around you, regardless of vaccination status, has to wear a mask for 10 days. So masks are still, they're everywhere.
Well, this is what he's talking about. And so this is where I suppose he's right. It's time for medical professionals to offer this advice and counsel. To say, you know, because otherwise it's just, you know.
It's going to go on forever.
Well, otherwise, if it's just a regular person, oh, you're just a Trump supporter. You're just this. You're just that. You know, what do you know? Are you a doctor? Are you an epidemiologist? And when the response is, well, actually, yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it will carry more weight with some of these people who are acting irrationally that Prasad talks about.
Well, this is from Pritzker. If you didn't wear a mask, you were the enemy.
The enemy is not your mask. If you're not wearing a mask in public, you're endangering everyone around you. So the enemy is you.
Shaming.
The thing that the things that they got away with.
I know.
So far, you have a chance to not let them get away with it as we're in month 33 of the emergency order. The CDC, going back to Dr. Prasad, the CDC has done you a disservice. It enabled people to act irrationally by pushing Paxlovid in people in whom it was not studied. It encouraged people to mask without ever generating data if the community recommendation worked. And worse, long after it made worse, long after it made sense in terms of the mask wearing per Jelly Belly there, it recently encouraged a healthy 20-year-olds to wear an N95. That is frankly bad advice. Any COVID benefit dwarfed by the downsides of making a 20-year-old think they are vulnerable and weak. Any COVID benefit is dwarfed by the downsides of making a 20-year-old think they are vulnerable and weak. And that would go, I would suggest, for young people under that age, too.
Well, no health leaders ever came out and said, you know, it's okay if you get COVID. We're all going to get it. It's not a death sentence. And that was so irresponsible of them. And still to this day, it's okay. Guys, it is okay to get COVID. You'll live. And then once you get it, your immune system's going to be stronger, so you won't, you know, possibly get it the next time. But then some people are five shots in, and they've had COVID. I know one person, five shots in, three times they've had COVID. And they're still alive.
Yeah, maybe the question, I mean, not to, I mean, just sort of a friendly amendment to Dr. Prasad's recommendation. I mean, do you want to go back to living how you used to live or not? Maybe people don't want to go back. Maybe the thrill they get, the frisson, to borrow from Dr. Theodore Dalrymple, the idea of they're overcoming some looming threat, they're beating it. Maybe that's just too powerful. Maybe that just provides too big a dopamine hit that they don't want to go back. They never want to go back. They want to live in the COVID era. They want to make the COVID era for themselves the entirety of their lives. Maybe. At least they'd be honest. At least ask the question. Maybe you'll get an honest answer. Maybe that's what it is. I like it. It makes me, especially now, it makes me stand out. It identifies me with something. I'm part of something. I'm part of a movement, part of a positive movement. We're beating a virus. We're saving lives. We're protecting grandmas. We're saving kids.
I'm protecting you. I mean, my church is fully masked for three services every Sunday. And if you don't wear a mask, they give you the stink eye, which is just ridiculous.
I want somebody to just be honest about it. I don't want to live my pre-COVID life. I want to wear my mask. I want to have the CO2 monitor around my neck like, you know, Flava Flav shower clock. Yeah, okay, fine. So that's the way I want to live. It's fine. If that's the way you want to live, it's fine. Just be honest about it. Don't say it's based on the science and data because it's not. Just say, you know, I feel good about this and what we're doing and trying to do, and I feel important.
Well, they feel a part of something. Like, look at me. I'm helping you.
Maybe.
By protecting you from me.
Maybe.
And they also, now germs are bad. No, germs are not all bad. But they think that now. They think that, you know, Pritzker told me, like, I'd be an enemy if I didn't wear a mask.
No, forget all that stuff. Yeah. It's just, what's really going on?
They brainwashed them.
What's really going on with you? That'd be interesting. You know, you're behaving irrationally. I just was going to say, yeah, I know. It's just what I want to do. It's just my thing now. It's my jam. Okay.
Well, a lot of kids in school don't want to show their faces because they don't like their smile. And this gave them an excuse. And some of them keep wearing it, not because of the fear of the disease, but because they don't like the way they look. Mm-hmm. So it's their battle regalia. It's their, you know. It's part of their uniform. It's part of who they are now.
I still do like the mask mandate only for politicians. I do like that concept. I'll stick with that.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Such a good song. Such an underrated artist. You know who this is?
He's going to tell me.
No, he's not. You don't know who this is? I'll give you a hint. Roxy Music. It's a pretty good hint.
Roxy?
No. Good guess. Brian Ferry? You remember Brian Ferry?
Is it with More than this?
Exactly. That's the song.
Oh, here we go. Ready?
Yeah. No. No, it was not a cue for no. No, stop.
But we've hit the refrain. I must sing.
All right, so Project Veritas went undercover to use one of their reporters to interview the nominee, the Democrat nominee for United States Senate in South Carolina. This is a woman named Crystal Matthews. She's currently a state rep in South Carolina. She's running against incumbent Republican Senator Tim Scott. So this is a black woman running against a black man, since you're about to hear. This is not me infusing race into the campaign in South Carolina. This is your or the reason will be clear in a second, because Crystal Matthews wants to make things about race.
Well, I heard on the news last night that you were racist.
Yeah, I know. We'll get to that again later in the show.
I'm going to quit today. Yeah.
Here's Crystal Matthews talking unwittingly to a Project Veritas reporter about her constituents, since she apparently, her state rep seat, she mostly represents white folks, honkies, as we call them. And now, then wait for it. How Project Veritas got turned onto Crystal Matthews as a potential target. So first Crystal Matthews, and then how they got turned on to her.
My district is heavily Republican, and it's heavily white.
Wow.
You're not a stranger to white people. I'm from a mostly white town.
Yeah.
And let me tell you one thing. You got to know who you're dealing with. Like,
yeah.
You got to treat them like s***. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Pretty, that's the only way
to
respect you.
Yeah, no.
I keep them right here. Like, I mean, my friends. Like,
yeah.
That's where I keep them.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they get out of control like kids.
Trust
me. So, you know, like, for me, all these other people are tiptoeing around them, and I'm like, well, that's a white I ain't doing that.
It's maybe a little bit hard to hear. She talks about you got to let them know one thing. You're not going to take their blank. She says, I treat them, she's talking about white people, like blank, like Shiite. That's what she says.
Right.
I don't tiptoe around them. I'm like, you know, that's some white blank that you're doing right now. And I treat them like blank, which is just interesting. But it's interesting on a couple levels. One, I mean, it speaks to what a ill-informed, cynical person she is. But that sort of is how I think you prey on the misplaced guilt of some white people who have become as race obsessed as some of these race hustlers who profit from the hustle. And there's a point there, not to get too much of a psychoanalytical tangent, but. So here's how she came to the attention. So this is the, you know, treat white people like blank is the headline, and this is what people are talking about. Yeah, yeah. Interesting campaign stance to take, yeah, for sure. But here's how she came to their attention. She's talking to a guy named David Solomon Ballard in this next clip, who's an inmate at the Prairie Correctional Institution in South Carolina. Remember, she's a state rep. She's the Democrat nominee for Senate in South Carolina. And listen to the topic of discussion.
Why are they talking?
She is having with this South Carolina ward of the state.
As far as getting people to infiltrate on the other side and everything, because the only way they're going to be the homies from the inside out in the
way. We need somebody who understands street games that we can clean up and put in a that no, like, again, we all working towards the same goal, and we all know what the play is.
Right.
Almost like a secret society.
Mm-hmm.
Exclusive membership.
Right, right.
We need that watch. Where's the gangsters? Where the street at? Like, where they at? And I'm telling you, them with school is you can't out-swindle them. They might not know all the college words, but you can't hustle them.
Right.
You can't with their money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they see the game a mile away. Where them at? We need to put some mm-hmm. of them in a suit. And tied.
Yeah, this one young brother that that used to be on the front line with me when I was out there right then, you know. He's organized. He a blood. But he very political. You know what I'm saying? So I would get tight to his name, so we're gonna reach out to him and see if y'all can have a face to face about what
we
can do.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to test him. He gotta be able to walk and talk the talk. He gotta be able to down his own people. He gotta be able to explain why he used to be that way. I used to be with that shit, but I'm not with it now because X, Y, and Z. He gonna have to be able to articulate that shit. He can't convince me. He can't convince them.
So you know what she's doing there? She's enlisting gangbangers to help with her campaign. And, oh, by the way, you know, lest anyone search for their fainting couches in Chicago, this has long been a staple of Chicago politics. It, from time to time, it's actually been reported on. But the involvement of street gangs with Chicago politics and, by extension, state politics, there's a lot of tradition there. And I'm not just talking about Gator Bradley. And it may help inform, not to beat this drum too repetitively, but it's relevant here. It may inform how the Safety Act got passed. Who is serving who and for what reason? Because one of the reasons that Jelly Belly had no choice but to sign the Safety Act, which he's probably never read, doesn't need to read it. He can just call any criticism, misinformation, and fear-mongering, and nobody asks him follow-up questions, so that's all he needs to do. One of the reasons is it came from the Black Caucus in Springfield. Right. Those are the sponsors.
They were all with him when he signed it.
LG Sims and Slaughter Simpson. And Marcus Evans.
Kimberly Lyford.
Well, so who does this, I guess, if you want to say, disproportionately benefit? It's not Black families. It's the criminal element, which, again,
it helps the criminal.
It's disproportionately Black. It's disproportionately Black. That's just what it is. So the alliance, to me, everybody's focused on the treat white people badly, like blank. That's what they're focused on. The more interesting thing is how she got on Project Veritas's radar, this conversation with an inmate about how to get gangstas and street N-word, which is what she said, involved in her campaign. And
I'm gonna put them in an effing suit, and then I've got to meet with them because if they can't sell it to me, they're not going to be able to sell it.
Right, and use as double agents on the other side. Now, compare that Black woman to the kind of presentation you get, the kind of thoughtfulness you get from Tim Scott, Black man. So this isn't about race. This is about character. It's not about race. It's about talent. And these are the choices. So the South Carolina choice, I think it's going to be pretty easy. I'm not really worried about Tim Scott. Well before this, I didn't even know who Crystal Matthews was, really, other than as a name that's challenging to replace Tim Scott. But Tim Scott's going to do very well. He'll be fine in South Carolina. That's a more sensible state than the one we live in. But the dynamic is not dissimilar to Chicago. I mean, to the extent that the left is race obsessed and you want to talk about race, I'm happy to talk about race. You think them calling me a racist frightens me? Don't think so. I know who I am. And I'm not doing any tap dancing for anybody. So what about that? Do you want people that present themselves professionally? And this is across the spectrum. It's not partisan. It's about quality of leadership. It's about legitimacy of leadership. So like our friend LaShawn Ford, who's a West Side Democrat. But he's down for some things I'm not. He thinks the Safety Act's a good thing. He's wrong, but he's not wrong from a bad place. He's just wrong. He's wrong on the implications of the Safety Act. But it's not because he's promoting lawlessness or in service of street gangs or anything like that. So it's different. So you can
He hasn't read the whole thing either.
Well, so you can have, but you can at least have a conversation on the merits with him, with our guest coming up at 7:30, Willie Wilson. Can you do that with Lightfoot? Can you do that with Pritzker? I mean, is Lightfoot all that different from Crystal Matthews? She speaks in complete sentences. She uses less slang. But is her perspective any different? Even though she's a former partner at a big law firm, former prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office? As a politician, is she any different than Crystal Matthews? I don't know. Maybe she wouldn't attempt to formally herself make alliances with street gangs, but the hustle, it's not dissimilar. And it's been going on in Chicago for, in one form or fashion, as far as I've, as long as I've been alive, that's for sure. These are the choices that it comes down to when you want to strip it away and speak to the substance of the issue. Do you want to go ghetto? There's no other way to say it. Do you want to go low rent like Crystal Matthews does? You want to play the ends justify the means, including enlisting, formally enlisting predators to advance your politics? She's doing it formally. Pritzker and Lightfoot are doing it informally, and Fox are doing it informally through things like the Safety Act. And frankly, there may be some formality, too. They're not getting their hands dirty, but there may be some formality afoot as well. Old habits die hard in Chicago. So this is like real world of what goes on and why you get the representation you get in Chicago and why it needs to be called out, and then why they react the way they do when you turn up the heat a little bit. The problem the Republican Party has had in this state, and maybe some others too, where they've been less successful, is they think, so many think, that you can take on these sorts of people and you're going to be praised. Thank you. Finally, and you're going to be treated fairly by a press corps that's in their camp that plays the same identitarian politics. You think you can do this without having to engender any criticism, any name calling, any pushback? No, when you're getting the name calling and the criticism and the pushback and the unfair coverage is when you know you're finally making progress. You finally have broken through such that they can't simply ignore you and overwhelm you with their resources anymore. And maybe that's where we're getting to in Chicago and Illinois.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Some handy-dandy research from our friends Ted Dabrowski and John Klingler over at wirepoints.com. Here's Chicago, a snapshot of Chicago after 3 years of Pritzker and Lightfoot. 250 children in Chicago have been murdered since 2018. 250, 50 of them under the age of 11. 250, 50 under the age of 11.
Jesus.
Carjackings. The number has hit 1,200 so far this year. One carjacking every 5 hours. It's going to be an all-time new record. Triple the rate just 3 years ago. And three-quarters of those carjackings, three-quarters of those 1,200 carjackings?
Let me guess, are juveniles.
No. Well, they're aggravated, meaning, generally speaking, the use of a weapon.
Right, a weapon drawn.
Right. We're tracking for 2,000. So 2,000 carjackings, and three-quarters of which so far, so that percentage holds up, are aggravated. 1,500 people will have their car stolen at the point of a gun or some other threat of violence. And, of course, we know this other piece of the story. In 2021... total priority 1 and 2 911 calls, 788,000. No police available, for 400,000, 406,000 of those 788,000 calls, 52%. 52% of priority one and two calls, these are emergency calls. 52% no police available. Probably has something to do with the fact that we're down 2,000 police since Lori Lightfoot took office. And it keeps going and going and going. And what they're planning on doing, well, what Pritzker and the Democrats are planning on doing with the Safety Act, meaning the release of violent criminals with no bail, no condition, the further defenestration of police to be able to defend themselves, much less pursue alleged criminals. They're going to scale what's happening in Chicago statewide. And again, not me saying it. That's your local county prosecutor in 100 of Illinois' 102 counties. Those are your local sheriffs all over the state. And they talk to your local judges all over the state. They're all saying the same thing. Republicans, Democrats, black, white, Latino, Asian, other. That's where public safety is in this state under this governor and where it is in Chicago and Cook County under Lightfoot and Fox. Well, what can be done about it at the state level? It seems like an opportune time to hear an alternative. Darren Bailey is a state senator from Southern Illinois. He's also the Republican nominee for governor. And just in the interest of full disclosure, since I know full disclosure doesn't mean anything to the Chicago Press Corps, everything I do is a surprise to them, despite how many times I disclose it. I supported Darren Bailey through the super PAC that I run in the primary, and I'm supporting him through the super PAC that I run in the general, too, just to make sure.
Thank you for clearing that up.
Nobody gets blindsided by this reality after how many millions of dollars I've spent. Okay. State Senator Darren Bailey, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. And yeah, full disclosure, you've supported me since day one. So
that's true. That's
little
true.
Primary election of 2018, and we worked our tails off, and you got the truth out there, and that we were able to get a tax-hiking Republican out of office. And seems to me that the biggest news of the day is it's truth. As you just said, full disclosure, these newspapers that are circulating the state that are full of facts and truth, and Governor Pritzker has the gall to call it a lie to keep the people uninformed. And what you were stating and talking about at the beginning of this, our state is being destroyed from the inside out. Lives are at risk. They're being lost. And Governor Pritzker just simply desires to call that all false, fake, a lie, and turn his head. And I think as people are becoming aware of the truth, they're waking up. We're feeling that all over this state.
So a first order priority for you as governor would be to move to repeal the Safety Act. What else?
We've got to repeal the Safety Act and restore no cash bail. And I met with the sheriffs 2 days ago in Springfield. And I mean, this is devastating. People have no idea what's coming at January 1st. They want to know, and we're seeing that taking place in Chicago. And they wonder why that is being allowed. It's because the no cash bail practically exists here. When you have a prosecutor that will not prosecute crime, and with Lori Fox, and when you have police who are hindered and cannot do their job, and as you suggested, almost 2,000 vacancies, we have got to restore law and order. So when we reprioritize this $46.5 billion budget, then we begin to find that we've got money to support and rebuild our police force and restore law and order on our streets.
But I just find it so interesting because Superintendent Brown, you know, the Chicago Police's top cop, he's against the Safety Act. So I think these people think, well, that won't happen. Or we'll see. Wait and see. Well, it's coming. And I don't understand. Well, I mean, it's
been signed into law.
I know,
okay.
But I'm just saying it's going to take place January 1st. And they all have their heads in their sand thinking, well, that's not really going to happen. So what is going to happen come January 1st, 2023?
Well, the Safety Act is obviously going to eliminate cash bail all over the state. And see, that's going to be a bigger problem than a lot of people realize, not only allowing criminals on the street, but it's going to force local counties to raise property taxes to keep the courthouse open, because right now that is a major source of the funding. When people break the law and have to pay bail, that's got to be replaced. More criminals will be released on the streets. The act micromanages law enforcement by limiting them so they cannot pursue dangerous criminals. This, a lot of people don't even realize this. This act allows unsworn and anonymous complaints to be filed against law enforcement. So can you imagine what this is going to be like whenever, you know, anyone who's ticked off at a police officer continually day by day calls in and you know, offers complaints to the police forces, and that has to be followed up. And it literally, this is designed to decimate law and order in this country, and that is really that is the only goal. Our prisons are being cleansed. We've been meeting with many AFSCME groups with the Department of Corrections, and they're very concerned about what they're seeing, because even within our prison facilities, criminals have more rights than the people that are there, you know, caring for them, and they're abusing that, and people are leaving those jobs as well. So,
well, I hope those AFSCME bargaining units, the prison guards and whatnot, I hope they're going to revolt against their public sector union leadership and vote for you and other Republicans, because the public sector unions, their representation is part of the problem in this state.
You're exactly right, and I am anticipating that, Dan. And unions as a whole, they're just not being represented properly by these union bosses. And then even here within the state of Illinois, this pension crisis, hands down, was created by career politicians and union bosses. So, and I think people are realizing that, because that's what we've been communicating now for over 2 years. And again, with the help of Ted Dabrowski and Wire Points and these newspapers that are circulating across the state now, they've got these facts in them. And it's awesome, because every day when people are receiving this, they're texting me this information. I mean, I've been trying to expel this and talk about this for 2 years, but it's finally getting out and it's finally resonating.
Something else that's a law and order issue that's come to the fore because of Texas Governor Greg Abbott sending a few busloads of migrants up to Chicago, sanctuary city that's located in a sanctuary state called Illinois. This tweet I found interesting from Raul Ortiz. Raul Ortiz is the United States Border Patrol's chief. He's the chief of the United States Border Patrol, a chief of the Border Patrol under this president, President Biden. Okay. He tweeted out 3 day recap, 71 pounds of meth, 100 pills of fentanyl, 2,690 migrants, 10 large groups, 10 sex offenders, 4 gangbangers, 1 murderer, 1 injury to a child, 91 rescues. He writes in summary, the dangers are real. Great work by our agents. So, you know, all the hue and cry over a couple of busloads of migrants that had been vetted by Texas authorities and sent up to Chicago to make a point about sanctuary cities and sanctuary states as compared to what these communities and states at the border are experiencing. And you've seen big city, a big sanctuary city and sanctuary state politicians like Pritzker and Lightfoot and Adams in New York and Hochul in New York and Bowser in D.C., you know, crying foul over this. And yet you hear from President Biden's chief of the United States Border Patrol what's actually happening at the border, just a 3 day snapshot. Seems to me that part of the law and order message also has to do with rescinding Illinois' designation as a sanctuary state.
Absolutely. That was egregious. So when that was allowed, and, you know, I don't care who you are, when you see these people getting off these buses and you know they're illegal, they're here in our country illegally, and they're dressed to the hilt and new clothing and given food and whatever they need, and you don't have to walk very far anywhere in Chicago and see the homeless problem that we have. You don't have to have too many conversations with people who are here right now struggling to earn their citizenship legally. Something terribly is wrong. And again, you know, law enforcement as a whole has been it's been decimated because law enforcement officials cannot do their job. So So those days must come to an end. And as we continue to educate people and really pressing down on that on these next 2 months of letting them know that Governor Pritzker has single-handedly created every bit of these problems, this situation with law enforcement, with his Safety Act, with his no cash bail, with the many other bills that he has signed into law and helped push, this man is responsible for the breakdown of law and order. And come January 1st, a lot of what we're talking about that's taking place in the Chicago area right now, come January 1st, this is going to be a problem statewide. People don't realize that a simple offense of trespassing in your house, on your yard, in your business, the law enforcement can only stand there by this Safety Act and write a warning. That's all that they can do. They cannot forcefully remove these people. So we've got a pretty dire situation on our hands, and the people have got to get engaged and understand what's going on and show up to vote for change.
And now the Parental Notification Act, obviously you'd sign that right away when you would become governor. But abortion rights, and people don't understand that there are no restrictions on abortions. And even 72% or 78% of the Democrats want some restrictions on abortion. And I know that you've been hit hard about incest and rape, and I just want to know where you stand on that.
You know, I'm going to tell you what, Amy, this people need to realize that all this fear-mongering that J.B. Pritzker is doing, that's exactly what he's doing. He's not talking about the issues of crime, taxes, and our failed education. He refuses to talk about that because he has created that problem. But instead, he wants to fear-monger and let people assume or think that something crazy is going to happen or change in Illinois, when the reality is nothing's going to change. When you look at our political climate of how things are made up, nothing's going to change. Governor Pritzker wants to divide us with these issues. But instead, we need to be working on what unites us. And everyone across the state, especially our friends right here in Chicago, they're concerned about their safety. And yeah, you may not be so concerned about it on the Gold Coast or downtown, but if you want to get a hold of me and you want to follow me into some of these churches and areas and Humboldt Park and Garfield Park and some of these areas that I've been, Cindy and I have been attending and having meetings at, and you look out and there's police sitting on every corner and monitoring the situation, and families won't let their children walk out in the streets. Well, there's where the problems are at, our problems with our failed colleges and our failed schools. Governor Pritzker doesn't want to talk about any of that, but instead he wants to push these social issues, and people need to realize nothing's going to change. But I have been very adamant that there is no reason in the world why we Illinoisans, our tax money, should be paying for abortions. So two things, restoring parental notification and getting rid of taxpayer-funded abortion, those two items will be front and center on my agenda on day one as governor.
And those are two items, parental notification and taxpayer funding, that are supported by a supermajority of Illinois families. I mean, that's really where it's at, and this is, it seems to me, what needs to get out, is that there's, you know, a belief system, and then there's what you can practically and pragmatically do that has popular support, and that's what you're talking about.
No, that's exactly right. And if people want to, you know, as a governor, it's that, you know, Pritzker's showing us how this shouldn't work with all this 33 now executive order straight. This man's a tyrant, and he's proven it in his actions. If the General Assembly wants to get together and pass laws, you know, regarding some of these issues of which he's issuing these executive orders, then that is what is supposed to happen. And so it is with these social issues. Until there's, you know, a majority of one way or the other, and the General Assembly comes in to convene and change some of the laws and change some of the things, then that's the time when, you know, I'll have the opportunity to look at and consider. But many of these issues are indeed laws. The laws are on the books. And you know, you mentioned something that's kind of interesting, that many Democrats now are kind of taking a look at this situation and realizing that, well, maybe full-term abortion isn't something I'm interested in. I've had a lot of conversations with those people. But again, it's been Governor Pritzker that has allowed that in the April and May of 2019. And anyway, he's got a lot of junk on his hands that we need to clean up.
On the economic front, you have a state that's even in a low unemployment environment, Illinois still leads the Midwest in unemployment, as it has for a long time. We still maintain our title as the state with the highest combined state and local tax burden. And yet Pritzker is running around talking about all the supposed tax relief that he's provided. He doubles the gas tax and then temporarily suspends the inflationary incremental increase and calls that tax relief. How do you sense from being on the trail that people are receiving what they're getting from Pritzker? Do they understand the misinformation, dare I say, that he's spewing, or is there still work to do there?
Well, there's still work to do there. People are fed up, but people are buying into this nonsense that their vote doesn't count. It's almost this apathy of giving up. I do sense that a lot. But as we roll through many of these communities, we were in Frankfort last night, and that's our battle cry when we're with a group of 50 to 200 to 300 or more people. I implore the people, when you walk out these doors, you've got a mission. You've got to get people registered to vote. You've got to get them to show up to vote, help educate them to vote. But Dan and Amy, there's a lot of apathy out there that just, my vote doesn't matter. And it's just the way it is. And I'll deal with it when I can. I'll move out of the state, but it doesn't have to be this way. It can be different. Good grief. When I ran for state rep in 2018, the Illinois budget was $32 billion, and now it is at $46.5 billion. There's a common sense solution, and it's called, a zero-based budget. It's put men and women in charge of these agencies who have common sense, and they'll develop their own budget so that people can see what they're actually paying for. And we're going to discover a lot of waste out of that, and that's how we're going to start rebuilding this process.
He is Darren Bailey. He's the Republican. He's the state senator, and he's also the Republican nominee for governor. For more information on his campaign, get involved if you'd like. BaileyForIllinois.com. That's BaileyForIllinois.com. Darren Bailey, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Have a wonderful week. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, turning our attention from the governor's race to the mayor's race. Essentially concurrent races, as our listeners certainly know. Primary in February. Willie Wilson, who is running again, you've heard his ads on our airwaves. He has filed a lawsuit against the Chicago Board of Elections because he says their plan to consolidate precincts to save a few bucks is a throwback to Jim Crow days. Oh, boy. I came into Chicago in 1965, he told the Chicago Crusader newspaper. The year the Civil Rights Act was signed, I couldn't vote when I was down south. Yes, what the Board of Election Commissioners is doing reminds me of Jim Crow, the Old South, and voter suppression, but this time by a black woman because the mayor and the city council control the Board of Elections budget. Well, let's ask him for more detail on that provocative comparison to Jim Crow. Willie Wilson is a Chicago businessman, and he is a candidate for mayor again this cycle. Willie, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you all for taking time to give me a buzz and having me here. Hello to both of you all this morning. I haven't talked to you in a long time. It's 3 or 4 years, I believe.
What's going on here? Because you save a little money, you eliminate a few polling places. The city continues to lose population. So, to some extent, it would stand to reason. What's the problem?
Well, I think that if you're going to have to take there and close down some polling places, why would you do it, where a month or 2 months or 3 months from the election date? People need to be able to find a poll and know where to vote at. Why would you do it then? So if you're going to do it, wait till, April or May or something like that.
You need more notice. People need more notice.
Right.
Well, so even if there's confusion, Do you think this suppresses your voters, or you just think it suppresses voters and you don't like that because you want everybody to vote who wants to vote?
Well, I think a little bit of both, because you look at the map in some of the areas from my research and we've done, you got some areas that not as many cut out, and others maybe a little bit more. But I think everybody should have a right to vote, not to be confused, because if you go to a poll and then all of a sudden you can't vote and they say you go to another area, well, you get there, the line gonna be longer. It confuses you, you're gonna decide probably not to vote. Then you got the inflation with food, particularly our senior citizen who vote more than anybody. They don't have a disposable income to take and go to one place, then turn around and catch a bus and go to another place. So there's just a lot wrong with this right here. So that's why I filed the lawsuit to try to stop it. I don't think that it's so much like about well, Jim Crow days. I couldn't vote down south. So when I got into Chicago, since I was able and old enough to vote, we voted.
Right.
And then so, you know, it's bigger than a mayoral election to me. I wouldn't care about the mayor if I had to make a charge, mayor or vote. I would take the vote. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's much bigger than that.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people have marge and died for the right to vote. And I think you should be to save $2 million. I mean, that's nothing there. I mean, she took $2 million from the taxpayer trying to help her own election.
Well, the $2 million too. I mean, with this, under the auspices of saving a couple of million bucks, and we have this story about a couple of weeks ago about schools, CPS schools that are at like a fraction of capacity, 5%, 10%, 15% of student capacity. And I understand there's a state law that prevents closing any additional schools until 2025, which of course is a sop to the teachers union. But I mean, it's just the idea that this is where they're really going to focus on trying to save a few bucks, when you see, testaments to wasteful government all over the city. I agree with you that it's a curious case that, they're making. Yeah, we're going to do it here by consolidating a few polling places, and that saves $2 million. This is where we're concerned about efficiency, government efficiency.
Well, now look at it this way, too. If it were down in Georgia, for example, and a Republican was doing it,
oh, there'd be
firing like mad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay. So, but this is Democrat here doing it. Doing what they're accusing the Republican doing. It's wrong all the way around, but you ought to be taking and finding money to open up more polls and just to get people to vote.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the mayor's race a little bit more globally now. It seems almost like a repeat of 4 years ago. You don't have legacy names like Daley or Joyce in the race, but you've got, I don't know, what are we up to, a dozen candidates, 10, 12, 8, 10, 12. So it's going to be a crowded field again. Why do you think this is going to work out better for you against incumbent Lightfoot than it did as a fellow challenger, a challenger to her when the seat was open 4 years ago?
Well, first of all, you know, I don't have a problem with me running, and we lost the last couple of times with the mayoral thing. You know, you got to realize, I always tell everybody this too, Abraham Lincoln ran 21 times and lost before he became president of the United States, mm-hmm. right? Those people who failed are the ones who never get up and keep going and keep crying. Today, with everything chaos with the crime in Chicago and the taxes, as long as I have enough resources in my own personal pocket, I'm going to get out and fight for the people in terms of this the taxes, the crime. The population of the city is going down because people can't afford the taxes and losing their home, or they're going shopping in now a neighbor state like Indiana, things of that nature.
Well, hey, Willie, I do have to interrupt. I just want to give you a warning. You've raised the issue of crime. When I raise the issue of crime, I get called a racist by the mayor. So I don't want, or the, and the governor. I don't want you to be called a racist. I don't want you to be smeared by your association with me by coming on this show.
Your sarcasm is thick. Yes.
So just be careful talking about crime. That's off limits. You're not supposed to talk about that.
No, I'm going to talk about crime because.
Well, what's your solution? I mean, and is Chicago a hellhole?
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. I'll give my analysis of it. I still believe in the situation I came up with last time. We were talking about the four different police superintendents split the city in four different segments. But the only thing now, we go a little bit further. You got to also, and hold them accountable, you cannot make the police office mad and they turn your back on you. How are you going to take care of the work and try to take care of the problem? Why are you going to have 71 or 72 police around your house, you know? And why don't you get some of them out to protect some of the citizens? The crime situation in Chicago will always be here unless you're able to take and solve these neighborhood problems by reinvesting into those communities in a way of a foundation, meaning that if you know, kids go to school, before they should be able to graduate from school, they should have some type of trade skill. Education alone just will not do it. You know, we should make that a requirement. We got to figure out them grant and put them into trade school. When they finish, they can get a good job or they can do business.
So you
cannot make it.
So you want more vocational options for kids that are not going to college at the CPS level. That's what you're saying.
That's absolutely right. Because mm-hmm. you do not have the skill. We in those neighborhoods do not have the skills to get out and get good paying jobs, and that create crime into those neighborhoods that move downtown and out in other parts of the neighborhood and things of that nature as well. So you never will stop unless you go to the root of the problem.
When it comes to dealing with the immediacy, though, of the violence and protecting people across the city, you know, the argument's made that we're 1,500 to 2,000 cops light. We need that many more police to cover the city in a way that prevents crime through police presence, particularly in those neighborhoods that have been beset by violent crime for some time. What do you say to that? If, as mayor, are you willing to figure out how to put more cops on the job and back their play so that good cops are encouraged to go through the academy, or good people are encouraged to go through the academy and become good cops?
Well, I say this much here to you is that you need to, I said before, you need to take the handcuff off the cop and put them on a truck. Mm-hmm. And you need to lock them up. These people who are doing the crime, and if they let them back out, you need to lock them up again. You got to use common sense and stop this stuff crying. The first responder have to have the right to protect themselves and to do the right thing with common sense. Right now, there's no common sense into it. Why if a person walk up to a person and hit a person on the street and knock them in the head and run, if the police officer's dead, you telling me you can't chase that person down? That don't make no kind of sense, you know? Today, they got the police officer too afraid to do anything because if they did, they got to maybe get fired or be press charges or something like that. The citizen too scared to come downtown or leave out their house. It should be the other way around. It should be the truck should be scared of the cop in the community. You got to hold people accountable. You have to get a lot more tougher with this situation out here, because otherwise than that, it gonna continue to happen. So I'm supporting the police officer with not defunding the police office. You know, I'm for giving them more money, hire more police, bring the ones back that are retired out here. You know, and another thing, I think they don't make enough money. You know, they got to have the off days. The morale is low. How are you going to have a good police force with all this stuff going on? This mayor you got now is over her head. She just don't know, in my opinion, what she is doing.
Yeah,
and you know.
Yeah, and this, you know, we're remaining times I have wanted to ask you about school choice. Are you for it or against it?
Well, I think look, I am. I think everybody should have a choice to go wherever they can afford to go to. All right, that's one of our given rights. You can't knock it. Anything, you should have a given right. Everything should be work equally and try to work out in that respect. Chicago school right now is it's tough. I would probably want my kid to go to a private school or if I could afford it, you know, I had a kid in school. I support that because we have to get the education level up. You know, more money should be put into police officers, fire department. More money should be put in our schools and things of that nature. When, if you recall, when they didn't have face masks, I gave away 40 or 50 or 60 face masks to the police, the firemen, and to the neighborhood. Every 50 wards in Chicago, all around the whole state, went down in California and did the same thing. Because Chicago couldn't take care of its citizen, you know, and they're not, we're not, nor the mayor or the governor said thank you. All right, so it's the attitude that the people have, and so if they got these type of attitude, and the first responder doesn't respect you and turn your back on you, how you gonna straighten up a city?
How much?
You know, how you gonna run it?
How much are you willing to spend on this campaign this time around of your own money? And is it more or less than you're willing to spend on buying gas for other people?
Let me back up now here. Look, I've been giving money away since 1985. If you look in the Wall Street Journal in 1996, front page article on me, giving away money. I'm gonna help people with gas and food because it's a necessary to do that right now. Versus I was giving it away to other areas like the churches, the people down on the on the divide arc and things of that nature, and put my money in other places. But because so many people are asking me to help them get gas and get to work, and so many people ask for food, and we still got more to do, I just did my resources.
I'm not criticizing you. I think it's great. All that, the side, like, but this buying vote stuff that you get criticized with, I think it's a bunch of nonsense. So no, I think it's great.
Right.
I think it's great, actually. But what about, but the serious piece of it, the campaign, I mean, in order to go toe to toe and be on TV, how much are you going to spend?
Yeah. I would spend, well, how much money I put in it? I believe so far I put in my campaign something like $6 million of my own money. I told some of my, I think it was sometime, they asked me the question. I said, well, if I got to come up with another $2 or $3 million, I said, I don't suppose that'd be a problem, you know, but I intend to do what it takes financially. So in answer to your question, if I need to put in another three, then I'll do that. But I don't even think it's going to even take that much. I really don't. We are got a good ground team out. We got advertising out. The other people, guys out here right now, some of them in a race that should not be in a race because it takes money to run a race.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true.
He is Willie Wilson. Don't you wish you could say that, Amy? It's just like, well, if it's going to take another $2 or $3 million, I mean, I guess I could do that. I mean,
I'd love to be in that position right now.
Well, you got to work harder like Willie did, and then you could have that money.
Exactly. Willie, he's got a great heart.
Willie Wilson, he's a successful Chicago businessman, obviously. He's candidate for mayor again. For more information on his campaign, electwilliewilson.com. Electwilliewilson.com is the website. Willie, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
Thank you. God bless. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Reading from the summer edition of City Journal about addiction, particularly in consideration of the homeless problem that you see in major cities around the country and the disturbing spike in overdose deaths in this country, mostly fentanyl-related. Mm-hmm. Judge Glock writes in this piece, Subsidizing Addiction, if anyone wonders why, say, Los Angeles suffers around 2,000 homeless deaths a year, quadruple the level of a decade ago. Quadruple. If anyone wonders why Los Angeles suffers around 2,000 homeless deaths a year, quadruple the level of about a decade ago, and if anyone wonders why drug abuse and violence are the overwhelming killers of the homeless, one reason is the government is paying them to kill themselves and one another. It's a provocative statement. Let's get a little bit of description as to the evidence behind that claim. Pleased to be joined by the man who has a name ripped from the pages of a Marvel comic book, yes. Judge Glock.
Wow.
That should be a franchise. It really should.
Is that your real name?
Judge Glock is a... It's his real name.
No,
and his,
go ahead. It is the real name.
It is the real name, and his real job title is Chief Policy Officer at the Cicero Institute, and contributing editor of City Journal, and the author of The Dead Pledge, The Origins of the Mortgage Market and Federal Bailouts, 1913 to 1939. Writes on a range of topics, as you tell, because he's got superhero-like powers.
Right, he's got a cape
Judge
on.
Glock, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm sure you never get that, by the way, about your name either.
It's okay. It's a great name. I thank my mom for
it. It is a great name. Everybody wants to be named Judge Glock. Judge Glock.
Dan's getting jealous.
All right, so the government pays the homeless to kill themselves and one another. That's sort of a big statement. What's the basis?
Well, there's numerous programs today, government programs, both the federal level and the state and local level, that reward drug abuse pretty explicitly. In the piece, I talk about a few programs such as homeless housing programs that give extra points, as they call them, towards free or subsidized housing for people who can prove that they're overdosing, for people that can prove that they're abusing drugs, for people that can prove they're not in recovery, and for people that can prove they're actually committing acts of violence or crimes against other people, and especially against other homeless people.
But doesn't the government claim that they're trying to support most vulnerable people?
Yeah, so the argument is if someone has a severe drug abuse problem, if someone is constantly arrested or thrown in jail, they, of course, have higher needs. They're more desperate in that sense than other people. But that ignores that telling homeless people and telling a lot of people across other programs that the way to get into free housing and the way to get government benefits, say disability or special transportation assistance with benefits, et cetera, is to abuse drugs, commit crimes, commit violence, is just kind of patently insane when you step back and think about it for a little bit. We interviewed somebody at the Cicero Institute and actually accompanied them to one of these, as they call them, scorings. And that homeless individual realized and said that, you know, if I had been abusing drugs, I might have been able to get a free house. But he wasn't. And therefore, he didn't get any of the benefits. That message has gotten out. And, you know, we've seen some of the lamentable consequences of that on the streets.
In a sense, we shouldn't be surprised. Government aligned against the interests of its intended beneficiaries, because we see this all the time, not just among the homeless, but among the general population. What are cigarette taxes? Don't smoke, but we've already budgeted. We know you're going to smoke. You have to smoke. We've already budgeted for the amount of money we're going to raise by you smoking. Sort of the same thing going on here. Don't do it. We tell you not to do it. We have PSAs, but really we have already set up these programs expecting you're going to do it. We're contemplating you're going to do it. That's how we get budgeted by those who control the purse strings in Congress. And so you perpetuate the dysfunction.
Exactly. And one sense is very similar to the cigarette taxes in that there's a lot of groups, nonprofits and others, the developers of the subsidized housing that benefit from these programs. But it's even worse in the sense because unlike, say, taxing cigarettes and then basing a budget off them, it's like every time someone bought a pack of cigarettes, the government gave them an extra $5 to thank them for smoking. And that's exactly what's happening here. Well, I said in Massachusetts, for instance, if you are homeless and looking for housing, you get 4 points, as they call them, towards these free housing units if you can prove that you're using drugs right now and you're not in recovery, but only 1 point if you've been in recovery for over a year. You get a bonus 2 points if you can prove you've overdosed in the last 12 months. So again, they're explicitly giving people money and rewarding them for abusing drugs and sometimes just committing crimes. If you can prove you've been in jail in the last year, you get bonus points.
And this is this scoring system that you write about. At least one such scoring system is this tool that HUD uses, the Vulnerability Index Service Prioritization Decision Assistance Tool.
Jeez, yeah. I you had to put that back in my toolbox.
Yeah, Vice.
You borrowed it a while ago.
Vice-PDOT is the acronym. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the are actual scoring systems that are used nationwide by local, state, and local government agencies.
Exactly. And the VI for that is used by across the entire country. There's points for selling drugs. There's points for sharing needles, for running drugs. There's points for landing in a drunk tank or jail. There's points for being accused of a crime, et cetera. You know, it's rewarding every kind of atrocious behavior you can imagine. And people respond to incentives. People respond to things like that. If the government's telling you, look, this is the way to get ahead in our current housing and welfare system is to run drugs, abuse drugs, commit crimes, you're going to see the result of that, not surprisingly.
What about single mothers?
Yeah, so that's one of the kind of most disturbing part of it. They have a separate, again, as you mentioned, kind of infelicitously named VI-SPDAT for single mothers, for families. And someone can get bonus points for making sure their kids don't go to school. They get bonus points for leaving kids unsupervised. You get a bonus point, shockingly enough, if one of your children has been taken away by child services. So, again, the assumption the government says is, well, you're the most vulnerable people we can imagine. But normal people looking at it saying you're rewarding parents for abusing their children. And that's exactly what the government is doing in this circumstance.
And that's the extent of the thinking behind it is they're the most vulnerable. You know, the biggest train wrecks in of their own doing get the most points and thus the most government support.
Yeah, it's assuming that all these actions, doing drugs, abusing a child, committing crimes, are just totally beyond the sort of willpower of any human. They just kind of happen to people.
Right.
But no, obviously people make choices to do that, and rewarding those choices, again, actually giving them extra points and benefits and housing is the worst possible thing the government could do to someone who's trying to get their life together.
You give us a little bit of a historical perspective on this, too, going back to the early 70s with the creation of SSI. Why don't you just, run us through the last 50 years of that bad idea being, to borrow a phrase, supplemented by these other layers of bad ideas and bad policies.
Yeah, so back in 1972, when the government created this special disability program for the poor, there was some people there who wanted to include drug and alcohol addiction as a, quote, disability, again, under the assumption that it was sort of just kind of an act of God that happened to people and didn't involve any choices. And they did. They included drug and alcohol addiction as disability. So if you could prove to a government bureaucrat that you were addicted to drugs, you would get a monthly disability check. And if you recovered, you would lose the check. So, again, this is literally paying people to abuse drugs. In the early 90s, it really exploded, and there was over 250,000 addicts on the rolls at that point, and became a popular sort of thing. It was mentioned on Law and Order, CBS 15 Minutes did a piece. You had all these horrendous stories of people dying the day their newest disability check came in because they, of course, spent it on drugs because they were found, they were self-declared drug abusers. And in 96, the new Republican Congress, with the help of Democrats, a bipartisan move, ended this program. But as I described, there was a lot of activists who were very outraged at this and said, no, addiction is just an illness like any other. We need to subsidize it. And there were many programs that they've gotten back in place beyond just the homeless housing that give extra benefits and try to look out for people who are abusing drugs.
And I mean, is there, I mean, from following the policy discussions, I know there was some general talk and there's been white papers and plans. I mean, this is maybe going back to before even Paul Ryan was speaker, but talking about rethinking the welfare state, and this would be a part of it. I mean, do you see any reconsideration in the policy discussions about if we're going to have programs like this, the way they're set up and the incentives they produce?
There's a little. In 2018, Congress passed this Support for Patients and Communities Act, which subsidized what's called recovery housing. And recovery housing is housing that demands sobriety, that demands people usually work. They try to get their lives together. You kind of use both the carrot and the stick that, hey, we're going to give you this housing, but part of the thing is you have to reach out to and help get your life together. The unfortunate thing with the current program is actually the opposite. The current government programs for housing and other things actually say the people administering them cannot mandate any sort of sobriety or even treatment. If you run a government homeless housing complex, it's illegal for you to say, please, you know, go to a treatment center, get a mental health checkup, get anything. They say, and sometimes they actually give out needles and other things for the abusers, again, under a harm reduction approach, that these things are just kind of happening to people and they can't do anything to prevent it. But this kind of recovery housing, more things to help people get their lives together, is clearly the right path. And when normal Americans hear about it, that seems to make the most sense to them, and rightfully so.
He is Judge Glock. He is the Chief Policy Advisor, Chief Policy Officer, I should say, at the Cicero Institute. And as Cicero famously said, Amy, gratitude is not only the greatest of virtues, it's the parent of all others. So we're very grateful to have Judge Glock, who's also a contributing editor of City Journal and the author of The Dead Pledge, The Origins of the Mortgage Market and Federal Bailouts, 1913 to 1939. Judge Glock, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. And if you want to read that article, Subsidizing Addiction, it's at cityjournal.org. And he joined us on our turnkey Pro answer line.
This is the morning show more Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's morning answer on AM 560. The answer.
Well, you started me on this because you had a song from Kevin Bacon about corn.
His ode to corn is very moving.
Yeah, and corn's making a comeback. Corn's cool. Did you know that? I just went to an Iowa game too, and they had Iowa corn sponsored by Iowa corn, and everybody, farmers stood up. It's corn.
Kind of a big thing in Iowa.
Yeah, so there's this kid. His name is Tariq, and he went to a corn festival in South Dakota, and he was interviewed by somebody about corn and his love for corn, and they made it into a TikTok, and it's now gone viral. Give it a chance. He loves
corn. I really like corn.
What do you like about corn?
It's corn.
Same, they ripped those lyrics from Kevin Bacon. It's the same lyrics.
Because Kevin Bacon stole it from this kid. I was waiting for you to figure this out.
Oh, really? Kevin Bacon stole it.
From this kid. It was original. Like, this was the interview.
For me, I really like corn.
What do you like about corn?
Ever since I was told that corn is real, it tasted good.
Did you think corn wasn't real?
But when I tried it with butter, everything changed. I love corn. Mmm, corn.
Yeah. I like the way he says corn.
His name's Tyreek.
Oh, so Bacon stole it from the kid.
Yes.
Oh, and this has gone viral, so everybody's doing their artistic interpretation, their own arrangement of Tyreek's
ode to
corn. But it's
millions
of
views on TikTok.
Okay, that's cool.
They just, you know, Governor Noem declared September 3rd Corn Kid Day, so...
Oh,
and they said he's amazing.
I don't get it.
And Bacon actually like played it on the neck of the guitar with an ear of corn.
He did.
So yeah, he showed some cool. a little dexterity there. So give him a small amount of credit.
Yeah, he's talented.
Yeah, he's sort of on the downslope of his career. Though.
Oh, come on! What's that? Seven separations of Kevin Bacon.
What?
7 degrees.
Seven degrees.
Yeah. He's going like Nick Cage. In the last 3 years, he's gone like Nick Cage. It's been a lot of movies and a lot of bad movies.
But he's also in bands, so he's staying active. He's staying out there in his elderly age.
Yeah,
elderly. He's the same age as me.
Is he?
Yes, he is.
Well, you look a lot younger than him.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Wow.
No, I don't know about that. The hair always makes you look a little bit younger. Bacon's got the hair.
Bacon's got the hair.
Bacon's got the hair on Mike.
Yeah, and he plays guitar.
And he plays guitar.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
It's corn. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kevin Bacon's tribute to Tyreek, the Corn Kid.
The Corn Kid, yes. I mean, look at this thing. I can't believe he's strumming the guitar with an ear of corn. I can tell you all about it. When I tasted it with butter, everything changed. Because it's corn. Baking up with knives and half the juice. I mean, look at this. That's a very bluesy, passionate tribute to corn. That now I'm hungry for corn.
I'm a little concerned about Kevin Bacon's mental state. The combination of his most recent movies plus... That ode to corn. But no, it's pretty good. We're going to talk corn country because next up in a series of candidates that we're bringing you for consideration on the ballot on November 8th in Illinois, this is a key one because it's a pickup opportunity for the congressional delegation. It's Illinois 13, which is central Illinois to Metro East, so it starts out like Bloomington and jogs east to Champaign and then jogs over through Decatur and Springfield all the way down to Metro East. I think I've got that right. Regan Deering is the Republican nominee for this seat, and she's running against a public sector union-backed hack. But public sector unions have a lot of sway in central Illinois, just like they do up here in northeastern Illinois. Regan Deering joins us now. Regan, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Pleasure to be here with you and your listeners.
Well, so give us a little bit, make sure I've got sort of the broad parameters of your district correct, and then give us a little bit of background on you and this foray into running for Congress you decided upon.
Sure. Well, you've described pretty well our gerrymandered 13th district. We do not include Bloomington, however.
Okay.
But we are, in fact, from Champaign-Urbana across the middle of the state to Springfield and then down to the Metro East. You're exactly right. So this is an open seat, this race. Unfortunately, we had two Republican incumbents mapped in together to battle it out in the 15th congressional district here in central Illinois as well. And so we lost a seat there. And then we also, of course, lost an entire district thanks to the census and losing over a million people moving out of the great state of Illinois. So this 13th district has now been mapped for Democrats to try and pick up a seat here in central Illinois. And in fact, they have put in a handpicked candidate from Governor Pritzker's office and President Biden's office to try and hang on to this seat. My foray into the race really came from an organic place, knowing that we were losing our current congressman. And I am frustrated, like many families here in central Illinois, with the kind of disconnect between government officials and bureaucrats and policy coming out of Washington and what's affecting our hardworking families right here in central Illinois. So for me, I have experience not in politics, but in real life. I was an educator. I owned a small business franchise in the Decatur community that brought a great service and a number of jobs. And then lately, I have been advocating for low-income families to be able to put food on the table and, pay their bills. So I feel like those experiences are really preparing me for making some progress for the great people in the state of Illinois.
And what's the business economy or the business atmosphere like in Decatur these days?
Well, we have been losing population as well. And, you know, obviously coming out of COVID, we had quite a hit on a lot of our small business sectors. We do have some big industries in agribusiness and two hospitals as well, the large public school education. So we are seeing some growth. We've had some good news come out of a couple of state and federal grants that are trying to be economic drivers. So we're hanging in there, but, you know, this economic environment under the Biden administration is really making it challenging.
Well, and I mean, your lineage, I mean, you come from a family that had a big footprint in agribusiness, big footprint in central Illinois. You're the granddaughter of Dwayne Andreas, right?
That's correct.
Part of this is speak to the importance of agri, you know, something that we don't talk about as much up here, even though we have, you know, we are home to ADM, we are home to CAT, we are home to John Deere, less and less so, but still. So speak to agribusiness and the importance of that sector for this state.
Yeah, well, agribusiness and farming is the number one economic driver in the state of Illinois. And we had a great opportunity last week. I earned the endorsement of the Illinois Farm Bureau as the candidate in the 13th Congressional District. And that has allowed me the opportunity to continue to crisscross this district and meet with farmers and talk about what their concerns are. I mean, these record high prices with their fuel and their fertilizer costs, you know, they're facing the supply chain issues. They're having job shortages. We're meeting in roundtables and talking about how we can't get people to work. You know, and if we can't grow our food and feed the state, the country, and the world, we're going to be in a world of hurt. So, you know, this industry is talking about, you know, just wanting good trade options, less government regulations, costs they can afford so that they can continue to thrive and grow our economy right here in Illinois. We've got, you know, transportation and infrastructure issues as well. We have 100-year-old, you know, locks and dams. If we can't get our product, you know, to market, we're going to have big issues.
You see, it's interesting because I've been hearing about infrastructure as it pertains to commercial transport of agri-products for a long time, the riverways, you know, all this infrastructure we have with being centrally located that is so advantageous if we had a state that was sensibly run. Been hearing about this every time there's a massive capital bill going back to George Ryan's Illinois First more than two decades ago and fast-forwarding to Pritzker's most recently. I was here. This is going to be a big part of it. This is going to be a big part of it, road, rail, and waterway. And yet every time that we're done spending, you know, back in the day it was, a handful of billions, and then now it's tens of billions, we still seem to have the same problems. How do you explain that?
Yeah, well, I certainly have heard those concerns like you, and I hope to be a voice in Washington for the state of Illinois. You know, we have seen some improvements in some of those infrastructure dollars go to our neighbors and head out east, but we're just going to have a louder voice and knowing that Illinois, you know, is the heart of the Midwest and the heart of the ag industry. And, you know, we can't continue to ignore our crumbling rural roads, you know, our 100-year-old infrastructure. And so that's something that I will advocate for should I get there.
When you think about, you know, being a voice for Illinois in D.C. and a voice for central to southern Illinois specifically, other than agribusiness, what are some of the priorities you have?
Well, I have an education background as well. So we've been having a lot of conversations about public education in the 13th district. We really are seeing the devastating effects now that we're back in school of being forced to stay home and get into remote learning over the last 2 years. So we have a lot of ground to make up, and we've been having some great conversations about school choice and making sure that parents are able to send their kids to the best learning environment for them. You know, that's not a partisan issue per se. We all want to create great opportunities for our students and get them to be, you know, available in the workforce or continuing on into education to study a specific degree that can help keep them in their communities and continue to grow our economy. So education is one of those things that has been top of mind. And I think that, you know, it's an interesting topic when we talk about, for example, border security. You know, we have a crisis going on at our border, and this administration has essentially put out a welcome mat for illegal immigrants to come to our border. And it is a crisis, not only humanitarian, but at national security level. And, you know, I continue to talk about it, and some people give some pushback of, hey, we're here in Illinois. You know, what does that mean to us? Why should that be such a top priority? And I'm sure this week Chicagoans have a new perspective with an indication that Texas is now going to be sending a few busloads of immigrants to your city. But, you know, for me and my family, I have three teenagers. A huge concern for me is the fentanyl crisis that is, you know, booming in this administration's open border policy. These cartels are having, you know, the opportunity to bring across drugs. We've got human trafficking as well. And, you know, I try and tell my teenagers, please, please, I beg you, every mother's worst nightmare, do not experiment with drugs these days. We just cannot confirm what is being laced on, you know, and it's all it takes is one bad choice.
One little tiny pill could kill you. I know. I wanted to talk to you as you're going about your district and talking to, you know, your constituents, what's their number one concern right now?
Inflation, without a doubt, that is the concern. I mean, these kitchen table issues as far as being able to put gas in the tank, you know, buy groceries. We've got record high food prices. They're up 12%, you know, and we can say, oh, gas prices are coming down, but they're still, you know, too high compared to where we were just a few years ago. And it doesn't seem to be getting any relief. You know, we can have a cutely named Inflation Reduction Act, but you know, when economists are saying we're not going to see any actual impact on inflation, and we're just going to continue to increase taxes on our middle-class families and, you know, hurt our domestic energy production, you know, it's a concern, and people want some immediate relief. So that, without a doubt, is the number one concern I'm hearing in my district in 13.
If you're part of a Republican takeover of the House, you know, there's been a lot of Republican members of Congress that have said things about where they're going to investigate and who they want to whistle before committee hearings and the sort of reckoning that is, frankly, being demanded by many center right types with respect to how the CDC behaved during the pandemic, how the intelligence agencies and the FBI have behaved over the last couple of presidential election cycles to present. Is that something, are those things that you want to be a part of as well?
Well, I definitely am hearing that frustration in the lack of accountability from people I meet on the campaign trail. And so I do think that should Republicans take the majority, there will be, you know, some emphasis put on accountability for those things. I remember the first commercial we ran, and this is coming straight from my citizen mouth, was, you know, how do these elected officials and bureaucrats keep getting away with this? You know, we continue to elect people that seem to be working the system and breaking the laws, and, you know, everyone needs to be held accountable. So I do think that there is an opportunity for us through committee work to be able to put people to task and answer some hard questions. But at the same time, our American families are hurting, and they don't want to be bogged down by, you know, sideshows of accountability. They want us to get there and work for them and make sure that we're focused on good policy and good funding that's going to provide some relief to them. So that's really my main focus is going to be getting in there, getting to work, talking about smaller bills, reaching across the aisle. We've got to have some bipartisanship to actually get some work done and make some progress and not just make some noise.
This is more of a political question. Well, it's a political question, actually. The enthusiasm among Republicans or independents who are leaning Republican this time around, and that's the majority, which is why Republicans are poised to take the House back and the Senate as well. What's it like in your neck of the woods? We talked to a couple of candidates that, you know, suggest there's some apathy still. A lot of my vote doesn't count in Illinois because it's so dominated by Chicago Democrats. This has been a lament that's been pretty consistent over the last couple of decades at least. So what's the feeling you have down there? Are people enthused? Do you expect big turnout? Do people feel like they have a real opportunity to make substantial changes in the governance of the state and the country?
Well, I think that the Republican ticket in Illinois this this cycle is really exciting. We have a lot of candidates that are, in fact, getting off the sidelines and trying to fight for change at the state level and the federal level. And we're working really hard to continue that enthusiasm. You know, this is going to be probably one of the most important elections in my lifetime. It's a complete honor to be on the ballot and know that, you know, the residents of Illinois 13 and around the state are supporting me in knowing that I really am running for the right reasons. I want to continue to find, you know, success for all of Illinois. And we're focused on good priorities and good solutions. So I have been enthused by efforts out and meeting people on the trail. You know, they're getting involved. They're advocating for their candidates. They're showing up to be precinct committee men and women or poll watchers and knowing that they have a role to play in making sure that the candidates that they want to get behind have a great opportunity to win in November.
She is Regan Deering. She's the Republican nominee for Congress in Illinois 13. That's, as you said, Champaign through Decatur, Springfield down to Metro East. So even if you're not in the district, you can still get involved in this pickup and help this candidate, help Mrs. Deering win her race and help Republicans gain a seat in Illinois. Regan, R-E-G-A-N, the number 4, congress.com. Regan4congress.com is her website for more information on the candidacy, the campaign, get involved, make a donation, help this effort that is underway downstate. Regan, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
I really appreciate you, Dan and Amy, and thanks for letting me speak to your listeners up there. You're right. This is a great opportunity, and I would appreciate their support.
All right. Thank you so much, Regan, and she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.